From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 22nd at Victor's High Point Business Park. A new restaurant called Beth opened that day. The chef graduated from the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. He's got local roots. In just a few weeks, more than 550 customers came in to try their four-course prefix menu. But Beth will close on September 5th. Why? Well, the answer is not because it's failed, as so many restaurants do early on. Instead, Beth is a pop-up restaurant designed to only be open for a short period of time. So what's the point of a pop-up? There are a wide range of reasons for doing it, and this hour we're going to explore the world of so-called pop-ups and related supper clubs. There are more than you think locally. It's a growing list, and I am already getting an education this hour. I think it's going to be a fun discussion. Let me introduce my guests. Adam and Sarah Peterson are here. They're with the Normal Food and Drink Supper Club, the brand new Normal Food and Drink Supper Club. Sarah, nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you.
Adam, thanks for being here.
No problem.
And Brian Van Etten is here. And Brian has a long time been a chef at the Owl House, and he is behind the forthcoming Playhouse and Swill Burger, which should be hoping sometime late September or October. It's been a long time coming. They're almost there. And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Evan Dawson, it is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Brian. Now, let me start with just the concept of what a pop-up is. I mentioned Beth, which is this restaurant that's out in Victor, about a six-week run, and that's it. And Brian, there's not a single answer for what all pop-ups are. There are different reasons, but help me understand, for example, Beth. Why do something like that?
Beth is what I would consider the traditional example of a pop-up restaurant. The benefits of doing so are many. As a chef without a business, it's very hard to start a business, frankly. The money, the resources, everything you need from overhead costs just pile up. They pile up. Having a restaurant like I'm assuming Graham has with Beth as a pop-up idea, it allows you to flex your creative muscles. It allows you to make food you want. It allows you to get your name out there, get the word out there. It allows you to demo out some ideas, basically use people to give you feedback on your food without all of those nasty overhead costs that most restaurants are affected with.
I thought banks really love it when you come with an idea. I want to do a restaurant. Banks are always like, yes, whatever you need, right?
Not exactly. I found it to be quite a struggle, actually.
No, I know. I joke, but it is tough, and you understand why it can be tough. Unfortunately, for full-time brick-and-mortar restaurants, there is a lot of risk. The Ohio State University found 60% do not make it past the first year, 80% go under within 5 years. And I've told Brian, I've told Adam and Sarah, if they're ever in the full-time brick-and-mortar business, I think it's people like you who are really thoughtful that do succeed, that understand that going in, as I suspect by now you really do, don't you, Brian?
Yeah, I think it comes from a lot of work, a lot of effort, and a lot of seeing how other people do things. At this point, I've been a part of a handful of restaurants in their opening conceptual stages, seeing how things are run, seeing what's successful, seeing what fails. And, you know, it takes many, many, many years, but my business partner, Jeff Ching, and I think we have a concept, and we have the talent, and we have the crew. We've already hired a full staff. We think we're ready for this. And we think we have a proven track record to have a successful brick-and-mortar restaurant.
So we're talking pop-ups and supper clubs this hour. So you just heard Brian describe Beth Restaurant, Beth as sort of the traditional pop-up. In just a moment, you're going to find why Brian's here, because, again, he's been the chef at the Owl House. He's got the Playhouse and Swill Burger coming. Where does his work come in as a pop-up? We're going to find out in a second. If anyone's seen Graham Greene, we'll put out an APB and he can call the program. We've been trying to get a hold of Graham. I think he's been sleeping all day, understandably so, because they're up late and they have had a lot of success. But if Graham wants to call the program from Beth, we'd love to get his perspective as well as sort of the traditional pop-up. And just as a bit of history, pop-up restaurants, you know, they're not... they didn't start last year, but they haven't been around forever. They're much more prominent in the last 10 to 15 years in the UK and the United States. And Adam Peterson was telling me a very high-profile example. Thomas Keller, who is the chef behind the French Laundry, and where else?
Per se,
right?
Ad Hoc was the one I mentioned earlier.
All right, so Ad Hoc is a place in Yountville, I think, in Napa Valley. Mm-hmm. And And I did not know that Ad Hoc started as a pop-up. Why?
It kind of leads into what Brian mentioned. There's a lot of overhead startup costs for restaurants. That's why so many of them fail. Thomas Keller had a space, wanted to kind of change the concept he was doing in that restaurant, but had a staff he couldn't just send home for a few weeks and not pay, had bills that he couldn't just not pay. While he was working on the new concept, he basically started the Ad Hoc menu, which kind of leads into what we're trying to do with our supper club. It was based around he just wanted a place where his friends, his family, the family of his employees could come while they were working on this new restaurant concept, and it just became so wildly successful it became a permanent.
It did. So Ad Hoc is now a permanent restaurant there. And so Thomas Keller has played the pop-up game. Pierre Kaufman, Alan Phillips, Stephen Starr, a number of big names in the culinary world have done this. And I didn't know about that until this morning, just kind of digging into it and seeing what's been going on. So very, very interesting. And you're starting to get a sense for how it happens and why. So still technically in the pop-up world is Brian Van Etten. And then we're going to find out what a supper club is. Brian, how have you been using pop-up to get ready for your full-time restaurant?
Sure. So the Playhouse in Swillburger, you know, we're not open yet. And we have taken on a project that has grown and grown and grown and gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. We have a building from 1890 that we're trying to refurbish. And basically, that's taken a long, long time. So in the meantime, we've been hosting a series of pop-ups at the Owl House, Jeff Ching's other restaurant. And our goals for doing so are many, one of which is we want to keep all of our fans and, you know, followers satisfied. We want them to be able to enjoy our food. We don't want to get stale and stagnant. So that's one of them. Another reason we're doing so is for the ability to work out some kinks, whether it be from the ordering system, as, you know, something's going wrong in our point of sale system and we need to figure out an easier way for our cooks and our bartenders to read these tickets that they're printing, to recipe development. Frankly, you know, we had a pop-up this past Monday, and I've been working on a vegetarian-based burger for over a year now. And the version that we came up with just for Monday night was a little different than it had been before, and it had turned out perfect. Without the pop-up, you know, we may have settled with what we had before, and because it went over well. But all these types of reasons are, you know, just beneficial, you know, benefits from us being able to put our food out there on a consistent basis and have people, you know, stay tuned.
And so, again, I want our listeners to sort of envision this. You've got the Owl House in Rochester on Monday nights. How many Monday nights? How often have you been doing this?
It's been sporadic. It's been periodical. We've done two so far. We have another one set for next Monday. And basically, Monday nights, the restaurant's closed. So the Owl House is closed every Monday night. So we have the opportunity of getting our cooks in the door, getting our
For your forthcoming restaurant,
yes,
the Playhouse
correct.
In Swillburg.
Correct.
Yep.
Getting in the door and having full access to every, you know, to all their equipment and just trying to make our concept work in there.
And so you've got your third pop-up coming up this coming Monday night. So folks can just come out to the Owl House, and it will be a pop-up version of your restaurant.
Basically, yes. You come in, and we're trying to bring all of the elements that we're going to have at the Playhouse in Swillburger into the Owl House in a much smaller format. For example, last Monday night, we brought in a Hawaiian shave ice machine and made shave ice cocktails, which I like to call snow cone cocktails. The restaurant, we demoed out some crispy chicken sandwiches and some onion rings. And the third element of our business is the arcade. So the first pop-up we had, we brought in multiple arcade units. We had tournaments going on the second floor. Last week, this past Monday, we had a pretty serious Mario Kart tournament going on the second floor. A lot of competitors got very heated. A little bit of cursing, and there was a winner.
How did you set it up? I've been in the Owl House. I've eaten upstairs. How did you do that?
So we do much more of a casual format. There, you don't sit down. There's no waiters. There's no servers. On the first floor, right outside the kitchen, you walk up to a table where we have menus, and you order just like you would order from, you know, a counter service restaurant. The second floor, we just open it all up. There was an art show this last Monday, so people were going up to look at the art. But you can sit anywhere. Most people were just standing. The arcade games, unfortunately, we can't fit up the stairs. It's a pretty old, small building. So the arcade games, the full cabinets, Miss Pac-Man and Asteroids were on the first floor. And the second floor, we just set up a nice big flat screen with Nintendo Wii and let people have at it. We had an MC run the tournament. There was a lot of rules, no cheating. There's a lot of secrets in these games. So
you're really trying to set it up in a way that is as close as you can get to what you envision for the Playhouse in Swillburger, which will be where, by the way? When you finally open it, will be where?
It will be on the corner of South Clinton and Meigs Street in Rochester.
Okay, and you're thinking maybe late September for an opening there. So these are the dry runs, the kind of work out the kinks, because we were talking before the program, if we can be honest, the first days of any business can be tough. It's especially difficult in a restaurant setting, which can be more chaotic. If you've got a nice surge of customers and traffic coming in the door, that's great, but you've got staff who may be still kind of learning the ropes. You've got the kitchen staff who's got to be ready. And so traditionally, how difficult can those first days for a restaurant be?
So with the few places I've been a part of opening, those have been the hardest days of my entire life. Absolutely. I remember the last restaurant I was a part of opening in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And before the clock hit 11 a.m. when we were opening for lunch service, you could see what we called the zombies outside. People walking back and forth in front of the windows, just waiting for us to open. And when we did open, it was a total mess. You know, we had as many line cooks on as possible, way too many, but we needed to keep up. There was a point where it was so busy, I turned around and told everyone there, put everything you can on the grill. Just cook food. I told them not to read tickets, just cook food. You know, it took about 2 hours and we ran out of food. I thought I had enough food for that lunch service, that dinner service, and the following day's lunch and dinner service. Those few days and the few days opening the Owl House, I remember multiple times, and I'll be honest here, I cried often.
You cried.
Oh, yeah.
You were broken.
I was bawling.
So that's what you were looking to avoid. So the pop-up restaurant gives you a chance to maybe avoid that.
Yes.
But so let me ask you an honest question then. The pop-ups have been, as you said, sporadic. You've got your third one coming up this coming Monday.
Correct.
But how do people even know to be there? And do you want a big crowd for your pop-ups?
You know, the first one, we didn't know what to expect, and 125 people walked in the door at the same moment. And it got a little hairy, but we kept up. You know, the beauty of the Playhouse and Swillburger in particular is the menu. This, you know, I've learned a lot. I've made a lot of mistakes, and I've learned a lot. The Swillburger menu is a classic American burger joint menu. We're not trying to recreate, the wheel or whatever that is. We're trying to have a very simplified menu that we are 100% confident in every component of. So 125 people came in the door, 125 people went out very satisfied.
Okay. Well, but let me also jump in and say that you are simplifying and you are humble about it, but you've been on this program talking about some of your own values and what you're sort of incorporating, working with Headwater Foods and those kind of things. So just a brief reminder for our audience, because I think that's an important part of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, what we want to do with Swillburger one of the main things we want to do with Swillburger is we want to overtake Bill Gray's and take the title of World's Greatest Cheeseburger and ask them to remove the sign. But other things we're trying, one of the main reasons we're doing this is, one of the main reasons behind it is the product sourcing. The beef we're using is going to be from New York State animals that were treated well, had a good life. And the vegetables, the chicken, everything, you know, down to the potatoes, we know the farmers were sourcing them from. It's a pretty values-driven business.
All right, so now you're getting a sense for the pop-up world. And if maybe you know of something that's out there that I haven't even referenced yet, and we're going to try to work through more of those. If you want to call the program and sort of fill us in, because this has been a great education for the host of this program, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And Kathleen already is writing into the program and wants to know what the ingredients are of the new veggie burger. She says, been trying to do this at home, and my lentil one was good, but it crumbled.
Yeah, you know, your moisture content in your moist. I'm not supposed to say that word.
You know, that's not a blocked word for me. Okay. I don't have the same problem with it, but I do know most of our audience would. So
okay.
So you've been warned.
The moisture content in the veggie burger is the hardest thing to manipulate and to figure out and to know when it's right. But the ingredients in the burger we're using, there's four major ingredients. There's roasted beets. There is black beans that have been cooked, cooled, and then dehydrated in the oven to get rid of as much moisture as possible. There is brown rice, and one of the other ingredients is dried figs. From there, there's a couple things. I'm not necessarily going to share them all, but it's taking that mixture, seasoning it well, adding maybe a little bit of a spice, and then finding the right moisture content, maybe having to dry it out a little more.
Very good. Well, Shane writes to the program and wants to know if a food truck is considered a pop-up restaurant. I think the Petersons will be well-suited to maybe answer that question. Adam and Sarah have had some experience there. Does that qualify as a pop-up?
To me, it doesn't, no.
It does not.
I mean, to me, a pop-up restaurant is more of, it's essentially a restaurant operating in an established space with maybe just another concept for a limited run. A food truck is... It's a whole nother animal than even a restaurant. You know, I think a food truck is a whole another industry. When we started out, we just did barbecue, and it was a way for us.
How long ago, Adam?
We started the food truck 5 years ago now, and it was just sort of like with the supper club. We didn't have the money to plunk down on a building for brick and mortar. We couldn't afford the overhead, so we started the food truck as a way to just get the food out to the people. Similar then with the supper club, this is just kind of our way to get the food out to the people. But
all right, so you've got food trucks, kind of its own category. Pop-up restaurants that we've been talking about, its own category, even though there are variations on that. And then supper clubs, which I hear often spoken of hand-in-hand with pop-ups, but can Adam and Sarah help explain what a supper club is?
Yeah, essentially, well, the supper club we started, this was basically my rebellion against the restaurant industry.
This is the anti-restaurant.
You know, I've been there with Brian, and I don't know if I will admit to crying on the radio, but certainly been there.
It's all coming out today, man.
You know, so first of all, you know, chefs, we've all had those days where you've been there for 14, 16 hours and something went wrong and yeah, you're just at the end of your rope. For me, it was that on top of, you know, like I said, I always had to work for somebody else or somebody else calling the shots at the end of the day. And what you want to do as a chef doesn't necessarily always mesh up with what the business owner needs to do to pay his bills. So like I said, we kind of started the supper club as the anti-restaurant. I didn't want to have to deal with the 14-hour days or training the staff.
Or the Dustin Hoffman telling you and Chef, you're going to cook this menu.
Yeah, I will say, having seen Chef the movie, the beginning, I would say, is very realistic, that scene. Now
you've been Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau,
yeah,
yes.
Many times.
Now how quickly he gets the food truck up and running and makes it successful is completely unrealistic.
Yeah, if my son could clean that well, we'd be great.
And then he gets Sofia Vergara back, and you're now hold on. But anyway, yes.
And that kind of leads into what we're trying to do with the supper club. So chefs have become celebrities, for better or worse. And people think they want to get into this industry. The first thing I will say is don't do it. You know, we're sadists, we're masochists at some level.
It's brutal.
You know, we get joy out of the pain and for some reason. But I couldn't do that anymore. You know, I had a young family and, you know, I just couldn't do those days anymore.
Okay, and so didn't want to work for someone else, and then the question of overhead and doing your own thing, we've been talking about that. There's a high barrier for entry for that. So Adam and Sarah Peterson have the normal food and drink supper club, which Sarah says you were trying to keep under the radar. Well, too late.
Yeah, busted.
Because your first supper club event is when?
It's this Sunday. This coming Sunday, yes.
How does it work? Where do you go? How often? What's the plan?
Well, it's...
Can't say too much.
It's very clandestine. I'd have to kill you if I told you. So basically what it is our members are...
Are they members? Yeah.
Yes, you have to sign up for the program.
Okay.
It's all a membership based.
Is there a cost to sign up?
There's no cost to sign up.
Okay.
You just have to prove some very simple facts. You are neither a robot nor mean. If you can prove those two things, we'll accept you.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, we kind of noticed, and it grew out of kind of extended from the food truck. Our food truck was essentially a mobile kitchen trailer. When the pilot program for the food trucks started in the city of Rochester, we couldn't bring the trailer into Center City anymore.
Why is that?
It was basically they wrote the legislation, so you had to be basically a single unit. Mine was a kitchen trailer pulled by a truck, so for the reasons we just couldn't bring it into Center City. We started basically then going to breweries, bars, and setting up on private property and basically providing food for venues that couldn't provide their own food. As we started doing this, we noticed we built up a little group of regulars who kept turning up everywhere we would go. Then on top of those regulars, we had people who kept asking us where our restaurant was.
Which was very sad.
It was very sad.
Because, very, very sad.
We don't know, and we don't know when we're going to be doing our next event. And
yes, we know we should have a restaurant. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And so what we started doing was, we told our friends to sign up, and anybody else, we started kind of giving them the website, which is normalsupper.org. And if you check that out, you can kind of figure out the application process. And really, when we started, we just kind of saw it as a way to get a bunch of our friends together and have some food and drinks. From the professional side of it, working in those professional kitchens, I'm kind of a control freak, and at a certain point, you can't touch every plate of food. You can't touch every drink. My new job, I'm working at the Honeyway Falls Distillery running the bar program down there. Now I've gotten into the whole cocktail program. So now not only am I OCD about how your plate is going to look, I'm OCD about the drinks. So this was kind of my way to basically get the food out there but still make sure I was touching everything and everything was up to the quality I want.
Okay. And so it's not a sustaining full-time business for you. Even though you can't tell us how often you're going to do this.
Not really. So, like I said, I haven't gotten burned out in the kitchens. I've kind of, the whole foodie movement has moved behind the bar, which was fortunate to me. So what I've realized is I don't have to just, there's more than one platform I can occupy as a chef. A chef doesn't just mean sweating for 14 hours, line cooking and screaming at expo and servers to come and pick up food. The culture now has changed, so we can do different things. So this really isn't, the supper club isn't a full-time thing for us. It's really more of a, like I said, I feel like roasting a whole pig. I got an itch to scratch, so.
The website to sign up for the supper club. Sarah's looking at me like, don't div it out too often.
Normalsupper.org.
Normalsupper.org. It's like a secret handshake thing. Sarah might not let you in.
Well, that was, and I mean, we don't want it to seem elitist or anything like that, but yeah, I mean, we are kind of selecting the people we want into the group. I mean, that was kind of the nice thing too. At a certain point, in some of the restaurants I've worked at.
Why would you want to cook for some people, right?
Well, and there are the people who will come in and say, well, yeah, I'm allergic to salt. Well, really? Okay.
I can't have any onion.
Yeah. So this was too kind of our way of, we're putting out a product and we're putting out a product the way we want to put it out. And if you're going to come in now and say, that's great, but I want it cooked this way, there's Burger King or there's your kitchen at home to do that.
Adam and Sarah Peterson behind Normal Food and Drink Supper Club. And what I still want to make sure I understand here then is when you do these events, and you don't have to tell us where you're going to be on Sunday. No one's going to come show up and crash your party. But are we talking a dozen people? Are we talking two dozen? Are we talking six people?
Our first table seating is 13 people.
They're very intimate seatings, yes.
We found we're going to go with 12, but we found 13 to be our lucky number, so we went with 13. And they're going to be communal seatings, so everybody's going to sit together. It's going to be family-style service.
In home settings, or where you...
Right.
No.
Essentially, what we're focused on initially are distilleries, breweries, wineries, venues that aren't doing their own food currently. But in order for us to provide a full dining, drinking experience, we need to still make sure we're, following laws and serving at venues with liquor licenses.
There's nothing worse than getting the ATF involved. Yeah. So,
I've heard that over the years. That's why they can't just pop into your home. So, all right. So, let's say I'm on your list. I'm a member of the Supper Club, and I would then request you guys to come out?
So, for example, we've just scheduled our second event for September 13th. We've titled it a Harbinger's Banquet. Anyone who is on our email list received an email And the first thing we do is provide a, we run a ticket lottery because obviously we have more people than we can fit at a 12 seats. So first thing we do is we extend the opportunity to enter into a ticket lottery for anybody who wants to do it. We don't want to just open up to the whole membership and then people who do want tickets or don't want tickets, that gets crossed up. So all the membership received an email of the ticket lottery, which they enter into. So, you know, if we get 25, 30, 40 names, whatever we get, then we draw from those 30 names of the 12 who are going to be able to purchase tickets for the event. After that initial ticket lottery, if all the tickets aren't sold, then we open it back up to the general membership to purchase tickets. But you do have to be a member to know where it is, what the particulars are.
Okay. And what kind of change will there be in menus? Are they suggesting or asking for different types of menus? Is that all up
well,
to you?
Well, so for example, our first event on Sunday, we're doing some theme dinners. So this first one is it's the day after Julia Child's birthday. So it's Julia Child themed. We're doing some classic recipes from Julia and Jacques Pepin. So we're going to try to do themes, some experimental stuff. What I'm also really kind of excited about is it's going to be more interactive. We're going to do some events where we have the membership actually prepare some of the meals. We have some membership local artisans who will be supplying us for the actual tables and chairs that we'll be using for the events. So, you know, the normal kind of extends to the whole local source thing for us. When I started out cooking 10 years ago, locally sourced natural goods was what we were all about then. I'm really about trying to foster the local food resources. I think Brian is too. I mean, we have great agriculture here. We have the great resources. And I think now, too, the beautiful thing for us is we never would have been able to do this 5 years ago. We wouldn't have been able to fill up a table.
Why not?
I just don't think the culture was ready for it. Hmm. I mean, I think there's been a huge shift in the way people dine, and they're much closer to the food. And so I think what we're trying to do was received much more positively than if we had tried to do it previously.
You agree, Sarah?
I totally agree. And I also think that we needed the physical and mental push, too, to actually do it.
Yeah, like I say, one of the big things was I had a blow-up with a restaurant owner, and he and I weren't seeing eye to eye. And I kind
you
of
really did have a chef moment, didn't you?
Really what I said to him is that I can get 20 people to show up in the middle of nowhere not knowing what I'm doing or what it is just based on the fact that I'm going to be there, and I guess I was right.
Adam and Sarah Peterson of the Normal Food and Drink Supper Club. It's normalfood.org.
The website is normalsupper.org.
Normalsupper.org if you want to sign up and then have a chance to enter their lotteries for it. What's the ideal then? What's the ideal kind of calendar? Because you're going to do one Sunday, then you're going to do one in September. Is it once a month?
Well, when we started, yeah, we were looking at once a month because, like I say, we planned on kind of starting out slow and growing.
We weren't given that.
Unfortunately, with the response we've gotten, and it's great, we're going to have to do probably two or three a month just because, like I say, with the membership numbers we have, doing seatings of 12, it's going to take us a while to get through the membership. So we're going to look at least two a month here initially.
Is that enough or is that too much, Sarah?
It's not enough. I'd like to do them all the time, every week, but you know, we have limitations ourselves. So.
Well, and that's kind of the whole point, too, is we're gonna do this when we can. And not kill ourselves doing
it. This is supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
This is a release.
Rick on Twitter says, Adam is one fine chef, and I am sure he will do well.
Thank you, Rick.
Is that a Rick that you know?
These are some of our, like I said, these are, and I
your
knew
your groupies,
that,
it sounds like?
So I should probably give a shout out to Rick and Shortsville Smokers, the Behind Barbecue crew, and Boogity Boogity Pit crew. You know who you are.
Michael wants to know, how do you find a facility for just 6 weeks? Anybody want to jump in there with that? I mean, because again, if you're just joining us, off the top of the hour, we mentioned a place called Beth, which is in Victor's High Point Business Park, opened in July. It's going to be only open until September 5th, so about a six-week run. How do you find a facility for 6 weeks?
I believe it's all about who you know. It's really, you have to have a connection to the kitchen that you're going to be cooking at.
Yeah, it's a pretty insular community in Rochester. I mean, we all know each other, you know, 6 degrees of separation one way or another. And what I've found is if I've needed something the other professional cooks in the area have always been helpful, whether it's been info or, you know, when we started up the food truck, we wanted to get a group of the trucks together. It's been a great community. But, yeah, that's kind of one of the things I say, though, is securing a place for 6 weeks is difficult. It's got to be – you got to know somebody or – like I say, that's why we're doing a one-off.
Well, that's still easier than owning a place.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Brian, what would you say to that?
You know, it might be easier than owning the place, but personally, you know, I need day, every day, all day. I'm still in that mentality. You know, I've burnt out a few times, but I'm back in it. You know, to me, you know, work is fun. And the type of culture that I like to create in the businesses that I am a big part of are running, I like to make it a good time. I want to be there, you know. I know there's more work behind the scenes than just once a month. I know you're doing more than that. I just don't know if it'd be enough to fulfill me.
Well, we'll see, because it sounds like the Petersons may end up being a lot more than just once a month if they're not careful.
Like, we'll probably end up shooting ourselves in the foot anyway. But
You weren't even supposed to publicize yet. And Steven on Twitter wants to know, can pop-ups be used to bring vegan food to underserviced areas, specifically the 19th Ward? I have no idea. I guess it's possible.
You know, from when we're talking about a place like Beth and six-week run, to me, it's I don't know how really feasible it is. You know, you can't just open a restaurant wherever you want. There's a lot of licenses you need to acquire to serve food to people, and it's more than just a beer and wine license. There's health regulations. Mm-hmm. You know, the Chef Graham, he must be in a certified kitchen of some sorts, because it's just not really feasible. Pop-ups, when they became really, really big in New York and San Francisco in the last 10 years or so, once people caught wind of them, and the people I'm talking about are, you know, people, you know, the regulators and people in charge of the health department, they shut them all down. And that's when they really went underground, and when supper clubs kind of popped up and they were doing them in more kind of intimate locations, and they didn't publicize them.
Yeah, look at the mistake you're making, Petersons.
Well, and I will say,
they're coming for you.
We did a little research when we started, a lot of the supper clubs we read about in the San Francisco where it seemed to start about, people were having them in their homes. Well, that definitely doesn't fly. New York State is not going to let you do that.
Well, speaking of, let's get a short break. We're going to come back and answer some questions from our listeners who've wanted to know, how does this impact the future of food trucks? Again, the Petersons can talk about that. Is this sort of a passing food fad, or are we going to see Rochester emulate Portland? So we'll talk about food trucks. I've got an email from another restaurant that's doing some pop-up stuff that we can tell you about. And we'll talk about building a community of regulars and the value of that. Our guests for the hour are Adam and Sarah Peterson of the Normal Food and Drink Supper Club, Brian Van Etten from the Playhouse and Swill Burger that will be opening around the end of September, maybe early October. He's been the chef at the Owl House. Short break and more with them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, should New York State ban religious exemptions for vaccines? California has already moved to do it, and there is a bill in the New York State Assembly that would ban religious exemptions for vaccines. We'll talk to the man sponsoring that bill, an attorney who defends parents and their rights to refuse vaccines for their kids, and some experts in the medical community Thursday.
In California, one family enrolled their 5-year-old into a school taught almost entirely in Mandarin.
The scariest part about it, I think, for right now, is just sending your kid somewhere where the teacher doesn't speak English.
Kindergarten in a new language later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections as we explore, I say, new food trends. This is where a lot of people who've known about these things say, new to you, Evan, but maybe new to some of our audience too. You know about food trucks. That's one category, and not new. Supper clubs, as we've been learning about from Adam and Sarah Peterson, involve a list of folks who are interested in the work of a chef, and there are periodic opportunities to get on the lottery to to get a chance to go to a dinner with the group, usually around a dozen or sort of a family-style dinner at various places around the area. So that's a supper club. And then pop-up restaurants have different iterations. Beth is one of them. That's a restaurant that's only open for about 6 weeks in Victor's High Point Business Park. It's open now. So that's an example. And then you've got Brian Van Etten, who's been running a pop-up restaurant within the Owl House. So every Monday night, the Owl House is closed. And on various Mondays, including this coming Monday, the Owl House becomes the Playhouse and Swill Burger, which is his forthcoming restaurant that's focusing on the good old classic American burger, video games, and among a few other things. And so so you're kind of getting a sense for how pop-ups work. And here is a note from Marco. Marco says he wants to mention the Nico pop-up kitchen event. It's a three-day event being hosted at Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue and will feature the talents of the Nico culinary team. The evening will be comprised of a seven-course tasting menu with wine and cocktail pairings. So their events will be on Thursday, August 27th, and run through Thursday the 27th, Friday the 28th, and Saturday, August 29th. Seating is at 6, 8, and 10. So that's so Marco, if you're listening, you can call the program and tell us a little bit more about it. If I remember correctly, Nico was a permanent brick-and-mortar restaurant that I thought had closed, and I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it's really interesting to hear them bringing some of the Nico culinary ideas to Apogee Wine Bar. So there you go. So a lot of these different things are happening around the area, and Mark wanted to write in and ask if the future of food trucks is impacted by this. Well, Adam and Sarah, future of food trucks, so how does that jive with everything that we've been talking about?
I don't think that it should affect the food trucks at all. I mean, it's just an added opportunity for diners to experience something totally different.
Okay, Adam?
Yeah, like I say, food trucks to me, food trucks are more, like I said, when we had our food truck, it was because we wanted to specialize in one thing. Whereas, again, I think the pop-ups or the supper club, whatever we're talking about, is really more of a full restaurant experience. We want to give you the sit-down with the white linens and things like that. So, no, I don't think we're going to, have a negative impact on the food trucks at all.
Yeah, Evan, one of the things I think food trucks specialize in is accessibility and affordability. And obviously, they're parked in a parking lot. It's a very, very casual environment. You know, the majority of pop-ups, and I think including, Graham and including Adam and Sarah, what you guys are doing here is a much more formal type environment, mm-hmm. from what you've just mentioned. And, the food trucks are going to thrive because they provide, often affordable and cheap meal. And it's these days of the most incredible quality.
Yeah. It's, by the way, when we say formal, if you could see what the shirt Adam Peterson's wearing, it's an awesome shirt. I can't read it on the air. It is an awesome shirt. Sarah, was that a gift from you?
That was, in fact, a gift from me,
I figured it would, getting to know you. I'm not surprised by that, but I can't read the content on the air. So I imagine that they're not going to hold you to too much more formal, but absolutely, I take the point. A food truck is a food truck. This is a little bit more of a different experience. And Adam mentioned, when you did have a food truck, that you had a truck and a trailer, and that the city has different regulations on what you're allowed to do. Now, we've talked to, for example, Councilwoman Elaine Spall about the city's efforts to be opening, sort of open-armed to and welcoming to food trucks. Did you feel the city was welcoming to you?
They certainly tried to work with the food trucks. My issue was, and again, now we're getting into, when you start to classify things, things get tricky. We market ourselves as a food truck when we started out 5 years ago, but essentially what we were is we bought a cargo trailer and built it out as a mobile kitchen and towed it around with a truck. And we were operating perfectly fine in Center City. We did the Washington Square Farmers Markets, the first food truck rodeo that they ever had at the public market. And everything was fine for the first year, and then the second year, for whatever reason, the laws changed, all the permits went up. But again, and this is what I want to caution people too, because now I don't want to see a bunch of pop-ups and supper clubs, and why the city had to get involved, because then when it became the trendy, cool, hip thing to do, people weren't making sure that they were doing it legally. And so there were food trucks starting on fire. When things like that happen, the city has to step in so people don't get hurt.
So you don't blame the city for regulating
the
way they have?
Not at all.
Okay.
That's hearing Brian and the way he's going about things, the restaurants, the food trucks, the supper clubs, the pop-ups that are going to succeed are the people who put the time to research what they want to do, lay it out properly, and make sure that they're going to do it properly. those are the ones that are going to be successful.
Before I jump on the phones, I just want to ask the panel if they agree with just my general sentiment on food trucks is, having talked to people in Portland where there are, I think, hundreds of food trucks. And you talk to people in Portland, and the way they describe it is, that's our fast food now. I mean, it's not that they don't have any of the chain restaurants, but not necessarily the way you would see them in sort of the downtown proper, that food trucks and creative food for a more affordable price is where it's at. I think that is a really cool development, and I'd love to see more of it. What do you think, Brian?
You know, I would rather eat from a food truck than most, you know, than all fine dining restaurants, frankly. Where I've gone through my career, I've seen a lot of different styles of cuisines and of the front of house operations. I'm looking for great food in a casual environment, and food trucks provide those, you know, better than anyone.
What do you guys think, Sarah?
I completely agree. Yeah, I love food trucks, and I'm hoping that at some point they will take over the corporate conglomerate.
Food trucks are becoming the fast food of this generation. And we saw.
So you don't think they'll be gone in 5 or 10 years?
Not at all. I think fast casual is here to stay, but it's a, for lack of a better word, gourmet fast casual. I hate gourmet, but it's a higher level of fast food.
Maybe more specialized, more thoughtful, more creative, and
again, better product that promotes the local ingredients and things like that. With the supper club, I mean, I'm trying to get away from the fast casual. I mean, we're considering everything right down to the centerpiece of the table, what song is going to play when. So we want to get back to the Sunday dinner experience.
Nice.
If you look, our first event is on Sunday. The next one we have scheduled is Sunday. We want to get back to
that.
What
are you going to wear? You can't wear that shirt, can you?
Why not?
You can most certainly wear that shirt.
and this was part of it, too. I mean, anytime I went to go and open a new restaurant, one of the things I tried to do was at the end of a dinner shift or whatever, I would try to go out and talk to the tables and talk to people. That's how I got to know a lot of the regulars who follow us around. The customers liked it. I liked it. It's a great way to get feedback. What happens is then you get busy and you can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And one of the last places I was at, I even had one of my regulars, and I love them. They came back. They said, "We miss you coming out to talk to us at the table. You don't do that anymore." And the supper club is, I'm going to be cooking, but we're going to be dining with our friends, essentially, who are coming to eat with us as much as we're going to be working.
That's very cool stuff. Let me grab Marco. Marco is from Nico, and Nico is doing a pop-up restaurant later this month. How are you, Marco?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Tell us a little bit about Nico and what's coming up.
So we are coming together, the original Nico team, Chef Max Spittler and our sous chef and our sushi team. We're coming together for 3 days at the end of the month, August 27th, 28th, and 29th, to put on a pretty cool special event for the Rochester community to kind of celebrate what Nico was and the possibility of, you know, what the future holds.
So again,
it's going to be held at Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue.
All right, so Apogee Wine Bar on Park Avenue, and that's also a pretty new establishment, isn't it?
Yeah, they are just coming up, actually celebrating their one-year anniversary this Saturday. So they're having a little get-together with a DJ there, but it's a beautifully quaint, romantic wine bar. Simone Boone is the sommelier there, and it's her and her husband, Patrick Dutton's business. They're very good friends of ours, and we kind of collaborated, and, you know, they were very excited to host this event.
So that's coming up later this month, and 3 nights with 3 seatings per night, is that right?
We have a 6 p.m., an 8 p.m., and a 10 p.m. seating.
Wow.
And we're kind of marketing it in an organic fashion, kind of a grassroots style, word of mouth. And we're about halfway booked to capacity right now, so things are going very well.
Do people book at Apogee? Where do they book?
The best way to book is to email, and I can give you that email.
Go ahead.
NicoPopUp@gmail.com.
And Nico is N-I-K-K-O. Is that right?
Correct.
All right, NicoPopUp@gmail.com if you want to reserve a spot later this month for the NECO pop-up that's going to be at Apogee. And
you can book at Apogee as well.
And Marco, we had a question from a listener who asked if pop-ups ever become permanent brick-and-mortar restaurants. And as Adam Peterson explained earlier this hour, the answer to that is yes. We've seen a number of cases, even some high-profile cases. He cited the case of Thomas Keller, the famous chef of the French Laundry in Per Se, who used Ad Hoc in Yountville, California, as a pop-up, and that became a permanent restaurant. Now, NECO is a restaurant that used to be permanent and closed. When did you close?
June 25th of last year.
Okay, and so what's the goal now?
Almost 3 years.
What's the goal going forward?
Well, the goal going forward is to, NECO, at the top of everybody's mind. We're doing this, like I said, for the community because there's been such an outpouring of support, and people constantly ask for it all the time. So we thought this would be a very cool precursor to kind of what we have planned in the future. And I'm not going to go into detail there, but it's safe to say that if the stars align the way we hope they will, that this is not going to be the last of what you're seeing for NECO.
Marco, thanks for calling in and letting us know about it and sort of adding to the mix of all that's going on in the pop-up scene in Rochester. Good luck later this month, and we'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I very much appreciate it.
All right, Marco from NECO, and you got a sense now for what they're doing. And he mentioned community. He mentioned support they've gotten since closing. And Brian Van Etten, of not only the chef of the Owl House, but from the forthcoming The Playhouse and Swillburger, you had 125 people at your first pop-up at the Owl House, even though you didn't know what to expect. How important is it to you? You talk about you get fired up to do this every day. Mm-hmm. How important is it to you to build that community? What does that mean to you as a chef, as a forthcoming owner? What does that mean to you?
Those are two very different things, what it means to me as a chef or a forthcoming owner. As a forthcoming owner, as much as I've never really thought in this mindset before, it means profits. Mm-hmm. Restaurants are really hard. They're really hard financially. Profit margins are incredibly low. If you have one guest that has a bad experience, 9 times out of 10, they're not coming back. So regulars are the blood of restaurants. Without them, no one would be successful. As a chef, it means more. It means more personally to me. It means that I'm doing something right. It's fulfilling to see people come back and back. Every once in a while, I don't do this as often as I'd like, but I like to step out from the kitchen. And I've told this to a few sous chefs in my time that have worked for me, that have had a rough night. I tell them to step outside, look around. There's 100 people in this room. Look at their faces. Chances are they're in the middle of a bite of something that you created, that you put together. And it's one of the most rewarding feelings, and it makes up for all those times I cried.
Adam and Sarah Peterson, I suspect you have had customers become friends. I'm sure some of them have been people you want to avoid, but some of them become friends, no?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, that was the whole reason for starting this. We had, like you said, a group of what started out as customers and became friends and grew. And so really we didn't have room for them at our house, so this was our solution.
Sarah?
Ditto. Yeah, I think our closest friends have stemmed from regulars at this point.
Well, I have another phone call from Ithaca. This is David in Ithaca who's got a question about food trucks. Go ahead, David.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, this is a very interesting show. I was in the wine business for 25 years, and I had a lot of great restaurant customers in upstate New York, and I like food trucks a lot. I think they're great. My daughter lives in Buffalo. I've been to Food Truck Tuesday, and it's great. People come down. It really fills up the city, et cetera, et cetera. I just have an issue, though, with this comment that the food trucks are sort of at the same level, although they're casual, of a fine dining restaurant. And I have to give you an example, which I'm sure you all know, is Max's in Rochester, which I think is one of the greatest restaurants in the state. His tasting menu, no one even comes close to what he's doing. And I do agree with you about all the frustrations and all that about restaurants. I worked in restaurants for 10 years. But I can't see how you can start to put some of this food on the same level of places that are like Max's and give people that impression.
David, I appreciate the phone call, and about 2 minutes left, a little short on time, but let's have the panel answer that. First of all, Adam?
The only thing I will say to that, unless I'm mistaken, I believe the guy who now is running the Max Kitchen Group came from a food truck. I believe.
You're not mistaken.
Okay, yeah. So that right there, there's a change in the culture, and it's the grassroots that is changing it, because unfortunately, the established restaurants are resting on their laurels, and you're going to see those established restaurants start to go away.
But I don't think, David, that I'm hearing this panel say that food trucks are equal to Max in every way. It's not meant to be the same thing.
No.
It's meant to be better than McDonald's.
Most certainly.
But no question about that. But it's more specialized. It's more thoughtful. It's better food than I'd probably say a lot of places. Brian, what would you say?
You know, I first of all, it's all matter of opinion, so it's hard to start a fight over who likes what more. But personally, I love casual. That's what we're doing at the Playhouse in Swillburger. We're providing nostalgia in a super casual and hopefully sometimes rowdy environment. I'd be much more happy in that environment surrounded by video games than sitting down at a fine dining restaurant enjoying a 10-course meal.
Okay. Peterson's?
Same thing. I mean, I'm paying as much attention to the music as, you know, I am the pig we're going to roast on Sunday.
Well, David, I do appreciate the sentiment. I think food trucks are better than ever, and we're very fortunate to have that. They're not meant to be the exact same experience as Max, and I don't think anyone would take that away from you or Max. It's just nice to see the scene diversify and the quality level go up. So as we get going here, Adam and Sarah Peterson, I'm going to ask you to give your website one more time. They are with the Normal Food and Drink Supper Club, and if people want to get on sort of your mailing list, get involved, what's the website?
You can either check out the website at normalsupper.org, or if you email normalfooddrink@gmail.com, that'll get you on our membership list. Again, assuming you're not a robot or a mean person.
I want to hang with you guys and do that.
You're certainly welcome.
Right? Welcome.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Brian Van Etten is not only been the chef of the Owl House, but also behind the Playhouse and Swillburger. This coming Monday, the Owl House becomes the Playhouse and Swillburger. People can just come in the door Monday night?
Come on in the door. Burgers, veggie burgers, fries, our world-famous vampire fries, and the debut of our milkshakes.
Oh, very good. See? And good luck with that. We'll talk to you again soon. I know that the business will be open late September, maybe early October, definitely before Halloween.
Oh, 100%.
All right, Brian, thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time to come in. Tell us all about pop-up restaurants, supper clubs, and trends that are at least new to the host. Thanks for listening to member-supported public radio. We'll talk with you on a Thursday.